Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Resiliency Radio with Rick Allen and Lauren Monroe. Interactive radio to empower, educate, and inspire during difficult times. Featuring live interviews with celebrity guests and cutting-edge professionals working in the fields of health, wholeness, and resiliency. This program is brought to you by the Raven Drum Foundation's Veteran Resiliency Project and is dedicated to all our military and their families. For more information, visit us on the web at www.ravendrumfoundation.org. Special show tonight, and I'm here with the spectacular, vivacious Mr. Rick Allen.
Johnny Allen, there we go.
And Mr. Moon Calhoun. Are you wonderful and marvelous?
I'm wonderful, I'm marvelous.
Cool.
In love.
We have a great show tonight. We pre-recorded an interview with director Rocco Belich. And he created this fantastic movie called Happy. And we're going to be talking about that. But just to get started, let's talk about happiness, fellas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How do you get happy?
Do what you love.
Yeah. That's a good one. That's a good starting point.
You do the happy dance when you need a little bit of happy.
Well, yeah. It takes a while to persuade me, but once I get into it.
Mm. Yeah, when he's miserable.
Yeah.
Feeling a little miserable, which is very, very rare.
Very rare.
Our family actually just gives him a little encouragement, and we sing a little happy song for him.
Yeah.
And then happy he dances.
He's happy now, he's happy now, he's happy now, he's happy now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
indeed.
That's great. And he does his little shuffle, and then everyone's happy. So his happiness is, in fact, contagious.
It is. So what's the secret?
Wow. We have to wait and listen to the interview with Rocco.
Good idea. It's mental.
It's perspective, I'm telling you, because, I mean, this movie, for those of you who haven't seen it, I really recommend it. It's such a fantastic movie, and you'll see just how many ways we misinterpret what really can make us happy. And there's lots of science that's pulled into this film, as well as people's stories from around the world, so it's great. Should we jump right in?
I'd say so.
All right, we'll take a quick break, and then we'll be back with our interview with Rocco Belich.
Excellent. First and foremost, it's fantastic for you to do this, because I know you're... Your schedule is getting really busy these days.
No, the reverse is true. It's fantastic for you guys to have the show and to invite me. I really am grateful.
Oh, no, it's fantastic. We were all really taken by the movie, and you know, we were like, well, why can't more countries be like this? But the thing I'd love to ask you is, from your sort of humble beginnings in third grade with your brother. How did that get you to where you are now and making a movie like Happy?
Well, it's looking back, it's an interesting story. At the time, it probably didn't look too interesting, but the truth is that a friend of ours got a movie camera from his parents, and this friend started making short stop-action films. And he and my brother were good friends, and my brother and I would help him once in a while. And I didn't know what was going on. I didn't really know how films worked. He would do them, and then we'd project them on his dining room wall, and I would be amazed. You know, how is this possible that we did this? That friend turned out to be Chris Nolan, who has made Memento and Inception and Insomnia and the recent two Batman movies.
Wow.
So he was an extremely talented kid, even at age six, and that's really in the wake of his artistic talent is how I had the illusion that I knew how to make movies. I didn't actually know how, but I thought I did. So going through school, I didn't have this kind of psychological hurdle that some people have when they look at filmmaking and they feel it may be too technical to understand, or, you know, it may seem like a steep learning curve to ever get into it. I just thought I knew what I was doing. So I made a few films in elementary and then junior high and high school. But I mean, you know, very short sort of terrible things, you know, not worth mentioning. And then when I got into college, I made sort of my first attempt at a documentary about a trip I took around the world. And I realized that documentary filmmaking was really engaging because you didn't have to know where you were going. You could really explore something in a genuine way and simply document, just record your exploration and make that into something that you could share with people. Mm-hmm. And so fresh out of college, I made my first, you know, sort of formal documentary. And it took me 4 years. It's called Genghis Blues. And it was a sort of unlikely story that we didn't get any funding for, we didn't get much support for, because it was about a blues musician that nobody had ever heard of going to perform in a competition of multi-harmonic singing, something called throat singing, that most people didn't think was possible, that a person could sing three notes at the same time. And that movie, I thought while I was making it that I would have to get a real job afterwards, because, you know, 4 years was going on pretty long. And in fact, what happened is we ended up, my brother and I made that film together, and we ended up winning the Sundance Audience mm-hmm. Award, and then dozens of awards around the world at film festivals, and then the film was nominated for an Oscar. And that sort of made me think, oh, well, maybe I could actually do this for a living, or I could do this again.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. It sounds like the life of a musician.
Well, exactly. You know, it's one of those things where the passion drives you, and you know that that's rewarding, and the rewards come from very, very few other places until suddenly something happens and people, you know, suddenly recognize that genius that you swear you had but nobody recognized, and suddenly people, and I'm joking about the genius in my case, but, you know, you always think, you think, God, this is really good. It's really good. How come people don't see it? And then one day, somebody does recognize that there's some value there. It's a great, great experience.
You're very humble.
So for this particular film, Happy, how did you develop the concept to move into this film? Was that out of an exploration too, or was it more thought out in your venture? Because there's a lot of research and travel that seems to be specific.
Yeah, it's a good question. Well, it came about in a very simple way. A friend of mine called me on the phone and suggested that we should make a movie exploring happiness. This friend of mine happens to be a filmmaker himself. His name is Tom Shadyac, and he has made tens of millions of dollars making huge blockbuster comedies in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
Things like Bruce Almighty and The Nutty Professor and Liar Liar and all these huge movies. And he said that he had read an article in the New York Times that morning about happiness, and the article basically said that we're a rich country, but we're not a happy country. And because Tom had achieved such financial success, you know, and he'd had so much money, and he'd had friends with even more money than him, he said that he had recognized for the last decade and a half living in his mansion that the people who clean his house and take care of his garden are happier than most of his millionaire friends in Hollywood. So this article really resonated with him because he said, look, I know that money doesn't make us happy. I have it, and it's not working. And I see my friends have even more than me, and it's not working. So I know what doesn't make us happy. I want to know what does. Mm-hmm. And that was really the genesis of this project, and I just immediately said, yes, let's do it.
That makes sense. I mean, was it Mother Teresa that said she saw more suffering in the Bronx than she did in Calcutta?
Yeah.
You know,
That's right.
Yeah. So, you know, what have you seen? What's sort of a common thread? What is this elusive thing called happiness? And you know, why are some people really happy, and why are some people not?
Well, that's exactly the question I wanted to answer, and what I discovered was very inspiring to me, because what I discovered is that although we can't all as individuals decide to become millionaires or decide to become as beautiful as Angelina Jolie or as handsome as Brad Pitt or as talented as, you know, athletes that we see on TV every day. We can't just do that and decide that that's our life in the future. What we can do, though, has a huge impact on our happiness. And what we can do is we can choose what we care about. So our values have a huge impact on our happiness. I learned from making this film. And in essence, if you care, if you prioritize money and power and fame and good looks, if those are your priorities, you are less likely to be happy. Whether you succeed at achieving those things or not, you're less likely to be happy than if you prioritize things like compassion, cooperation, being a good friend, wanting to make the world a better place. If you prioritize those things, you're more likely to be happy. And this is not just somebody's opinion. This is what the science is showing nowadays.
And so you're saying even if you become successful out of all those things, you still won't be happy. That's what the
science
is showing.
It's not that you won't be. You know, it's not that you won't be. It's simply that those are not the things that will be making you happy. You know, I was trained as a, you know, as a student of an, you know, in American schools and from this culture, I was trained to believe that what a, quote, good job meant, which is what we're all supposed to be pursuing after school, is to get a good job.
Mm-hmm.
A good job meant a high-paying job. It was, you know, people didn't talk about, our teachers didn't talk about the content of that job, what we would actually be doing, what impact we'd be having on our communities around the world. It was just that a good job was a high-paying and stable job that would give you a life of comfort and maybe even luxury. That was what we should all be pursuing. What the science is saying is that if you achieve those things, they don't necessarily make your life worse by any means, but they don't make them, they don't make your life better in the ways you may have hoped for. They don't necessarily make your life happy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the big takeaway, is that when you, in order to achieve your basic needs, you know, to find a shelter and food and to feel safe, to do that is very important. And to have those material, that kind of material comfort, you know, to shelter and food and, you know, these basic things, that has a big impact on your happiness. But we as a society have not recognized that that same trajectory, going in the same direction further and further and acquiring more and more and more, does not lead to this, to more of the same result. We don't get happier and happier until we're, you know, ecstatic and in a state of eternal bliss. So those things, you know, I understand why we have been led astray, because when you're poor or when you are suffering, when you don't know where your next meal is going to come from, material wealth has a huge impact on your happiness.
Right. Yeah.
So that's what has happened. Is the science is now identifying that that level of material comfort is very low of what we actually need, and beyond that, there's a whole different set of things that actually make us happy, and values is one of them.
Do you think that's something that came from the Great Depression? Because there seemed to be a really good sense of community, you know, before and after that, and probably going through the suffering of the Depression. But do you think, you know, just the way business is structured these days, do you think the greed has just kind of gone off the chart?
You know, it's funny you say that, because that's how I thought when I started making this film. And once I did a little more research, I started to recognize that people like St. Francis, you know, hundreds of years ago, were saying exactly the same thing. That our society is getting greedy and we're forgetting about the things that actually are important, which is our connection to each other, being a good person. You know, 2,000 years ago, people, you know, 3,000, Plato, Aristotle, there were people who recognized these things. And you know, you read their writings and you say, oh my goodness, it sounds like they're writing about today, in terms of people being disconnected from the actual fruits of our lives and being focused more on the acquisition of more and more wealth and material prosperity.
Mm.
Now, in the movie, there's a piece where you talk about the brain and or more about the physiology versus the emotional and the different components that can create a pie chart and what, you know, the percentage of what is associated with making us happy. Genetics was part of it as well.
Right.
And I remember it was really shocking to see you know, that percentage. Could you talk a little bit about that for the people who are listening who haven't seen the movie yet? I think it's really interesting.
Yeah, there was a fascinating study done. There's been a series of studies that have shown the same results, where they took identical twins, people with exactly the same genetic makeup. Now, these were specific groups of twins because these were twins who were separated at birth, often through adoption, and many were raised in completely different types of environments. So, for example, one twin would be adopted by an urban socialite family from New York City, and the other twin would end up working on a farm in Iowa his whole life. And what they discovered by studying these people is that roughly 50% of the differences of our happiness is genetic, meaning our genes have a fairly significant sway on our happiness. So if you're basically, to some extent, born happy or unhappy. But that percentage is much lower than most people thought. Most people thought that maybe 80 or 90% of your happiness is sort of just what you're born with. And what they discovered is that the things that most of us are striving for in terms of our circumstantial lives, you know, what kind of house we live in, what kind of car we drive, what kind of job we have, how healthy we are, you know, what kind of social status we enjoy in the community, all of these things that we tend to equate with prosperity and success really only account for roughly 10% of the differences in our happiness, which is a tiny number, mm-hmm. considering that so many of us spend so much of our waking lives focused on achieving those types of goals.
Right.
And the sort of inspiring part of this pie chart is that they say approximately 40% of the differences in our happiness is directly related to what we choose to do, to voluntary actions, and that includes thoughts. So the things you care about, whether you spend time with your friends or not, whether you spend time doing things that you love to do, even if they may not be generating money or social status, like if you like gardening. You know, people who like gardening, who do it, are happy, you know, tend to be happier than people who like gardening and don't do it. So these are very simple concepts, but the science is now showing how fundamentally important they are to our happiness.
Well, it seems like the country of Bhutan is doing it right in the movie, and I think for those of you who haven't seen it, you interview some of the ambassador of Bhutan, right? And you talk to him about their gross national happiness. And I thought that was extraordinary,
right,
too.
Yeah, Bhutan is a country that it's a small country in Southeast Asia, and it's a relatively poor country by our standards. And it's not a very industrialized nation. You know, there's still animals pulling animal carts, and they still farm by hand. And it's a rural, traditional place. They noticed, as they looked around them at neighboring countries like Burma and India and Thailand, they noticed that the countries around them, in the relentless pursuit of material prosperity, as those countries pursued increasing their gross domestic product or their gross national product, they noticed that these countries were doing something very bad at the same time. They were chopping down their forests. They were polluting their rivers. They had increasing populations who were homeless or who were sick and didn't have any kind of support because the families had dissolved as people flocked to the cities to get these jobs. And these countries were in some cases in states of sort of cultural upheaval, where suddenly in one generation people were throwing all their traditions away in order to seek wealth and prosperity in the big city. And the results were catastrophic. And so what the Bhutanese decided is that rather than pursuing gross national product and assuming that the byproduct would be some sort of prosperity for the citizens of their country, they recognize that there may be a more direct path to prosperity, a prosperity that wasn't necessarily defined just by income or life, a standard of living, but a prosperity that that resonated with this sort of a deeper sense of contentment among the citizens, you know, something where they would actually feel good about their lives and they would feel whole and they would feel like they're part of a society that they're integrated with. And so they began pursuing gross national happiness as a national policy, which is fascinating because it's just a twist of a word. Instead of gross national product, you see gross national happiness.
It's extraordinary.
Yeah, because it means that they start to look at things differently. And when they're deciding whether they should dam up a river to generate, you know, hydroelectric power, which they could sell to India, for example.
Mm-hmm.
That's the example that's in the film. They don't just say, okay, this is a lot of money, we can make it, let's do it. They look at the communities that they would affect. They look at the towns and villages and temples that they would have to flood in order to do that. And they put all those into consideration before making that decision. And in many cases, they protect what's important to their culture, even at the expense of losing some income for the country.
It's amazing. So would you say that community is the key factor in living a happy life?
Well, I think it's different for different people, but I'll tell you a few keys, what I saw that really stood out. And one of them is the values that we discussed. Another one is relationships. So Ed Diener, who's kind of known as the godfather of happiness research because he studied it for over 30 years, I asked him that question. I said, what's the key? Is there some single trait of all happy people? And he said, well, the formula is different. You know, some people who love playing hockey maybe have to play hockey 3 days a week in order to really, you know, feel fulfilled. Other people need to spend time outdoors. Other people need to just use their brains for their mathematical skills. You know, it's different for different people.
I get it.
But the one trait that all happy people shared is that they had strong relationships.
Mm.
Yeah.
And it does not mean you have to be social, right? It doesn't mean you have to be one of the, you know, the life of the party and always cracking jokes. It just means it literally means you have to love somebody and have them love you. And that's something we can all achieve.
Mm-hmm.
That's so fantastic. Important. I mean, you know, the name of our show is Resiliency Radio, and we, you know, our mission with the Raven Drum Foundation is providing resiliency. And I think that is everything you talked about is so important in having a resilient life. There's so many people that, you know, suffer from trauma, so many different kinds of trauma, and happiness seems so far out of reach. And the, you know, values, relationships, community are all such important pieces to becoming resilient. And I just...
That's right.
I want everyone to see the film.
Exciting. Oh.
No, we do. It's important because, you know, what we were left with was we were inspired. We were really inspired. And, you know, for people that haven't seen Happy, it's you can actually go to the website, thehappymovie.com/film. And so having said that,
there's a couple of more questions that I'm really interested in how you personally were affected by, you know, going through this journey and creating the film and for your own personal journey. And then after that, I'd like to know what new projects you're working on, you know, to follow up with this amazing work.
Sure. Well, I have to say, when I started this project, when Tom suggested we make it, I thought that I was making this film for other people. I thought I was making it specifically for friends of mine who were maybe 5 or 10 years out of college, who sort of, they had fine lives. Everything was fine. You know, they had jobs and they had houses and cars, but something just wasn't fulfilling them. I sort of heard that over and over, mm-hmm. people saying, God, things are just boring. There's nothing to complain about, and yet I don't feel satisfied. Something's not right. I thought that was the main demographic for the film. And I thought, you know, I already have those. I feel good. I feel lucky. And I've always felt sort of grateful and, you know, very fortunate in my life. I didn't realize until just a few months ago that after hearing about the importance of relationships, of course, I always knew they were important. You know, I always missed my friends who I didn't get to see often. But after hearing about how important they are in terms of happiness, I decided to move to another city to be closer to some of my friends. Mm-hmm. Knowing that if I didn't make an effort, they probably wouldn't because they had families and careers going. And, you know, it's normal in our country to move to another city or state to go to college or even for a job. But it's pretty rare to get support from your family to say, oh, I'm going to move to another city just to hang out with my friends. You know,
right.
Most parents would say that's not a responsible choice. But in fact, that's what I did. I specifically moved to a community where a good friend of mine lived, and visiting him a few times, I met more of his neighbors and got to know them than I knew in 10 years from living in a suburb outside of San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
So this community was great, built in, and it happens to be near the beach, so I could start surfing again. One of the very basic takeaway messages I learned from making my film is that happy people do the things that make them happy. And so, you know, I love surfing, but for 12 years I had neglected it because I sort of had listened to the cultural hum that said surfing is what you do when you're in school or when you're, you know, on summer break, but it's not what you do as a responsible adult.
Right.
You know, you have more important things to do as an adult. But after learning about the importance of physical aerobic exercise and getting into what scientists call a flow, which is where you just immerse yourself in a fun activity, I started surfing again. And being in this wonderful community, surrounded by my friends and feeling good because I've been surfing more, and recognizing that this community was a really nurturing place, my girlfriend and I sort of looked at each other and said, wow, what a great place to raise a child. And even though we'd been together for 10 years, we never really seriously talked about it. And just a couple of weeks ago, we celebrated our daughter's first birthday.
Wow, that's great.
So the movie totally, the movie completely changed my life.
Wow.
Well,
wow, what a journey.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
that
an
well,
adventure.
We just went through a similar adventure ourselves, as you know, and our little girl is just she gives meaning to everything, you know. She's just amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So we're right there with you. So
yes, you're just a few months ahead with those clothes that you've been down. They're wonderful. So grateful.
People did the same for us, and it plays into what we're talking about. What new projects are you on with at the moment? Is that why you're away at the moment?
Yeah, you know, mostly what I'm doing now is simply spreading the movie, getting the movie out there. I was just on a panel discussion at a screening last night in Wisconsin with Richie Davidson, who's one of the leading neuroscientists in the field, who studied emotion in the brain. I'm really focusing on finding ways to get the movie into communities and into schools on television, make it accessible to people. Because what I've learned in the first few months of us showing the film is that there is a much higher need for this film than I ever imagined.
Yeah.
People have come to me knowing that I made the film before they ever saw it, and with desperation in their eyes have held onto my shirt sleeves and said, what do I need to do to become happy?
Hmm.
And I realize that there are people who are in pain. There are people who are suffering. There are people who know that something's wrong. There's all these different levels of it. But there are people who just want and need to hear something that helps them find a path towards more happiness and fulfillment. Mm-hmm. And I really, it's been the greatest joy to be able to share this movie with people. You know, one thing people often ask me is, well, what can I do right now? What is it? Is there a trick? Is there some exercise? And one of the best ones that I learned from a couple of scientists is simply expressing your gratitude. Mm. Just saying thank you to somebody has a huge impact on your happiness. They did an experiment where they had people write a letter thanking somebody in their past. And this could be thanking your second grade teacher for something.
Yeah.
Even if you do not send the letter, it boosts your happiness significantly for days afterwards.
Hmm.
If you do send a letter, it increases again a few times. And if you get a letter in return that says, oh, you're welcome, it was, you know, you were a wonderful student, you can imagine that sort of spiral moving in a positive direction.
That's
great to see how simple these things are. You know, it's
simple
not
and hard
science.
To do. Simple and hard to do because everyone's so busy. And I think,
busy,
you know,
and conditioned.
If you can find time to sit down and watch this movie, those of you who are listening at home, can we get them on next? Can you find this movie on Netflix? You can, or you can't, you know?
You know, it's not on Netflix yet. It's on iTunes.
Great,
so
okay.
So if you have Apple TV, you can get it. And really the best resource is probably our website, because that's where we're updating information on where you can get it and where we're having screenings. And that website is thehappymovie.com, as you mentioned, Rick.
Okay, cool. Well, we're showing it to everybody. We showed it to our parents. We show it to everybody that comes over.
We have a few copies. We keep sending them out. We don't get them back.
It's great. Sorry.
Then here's my opportunity to thank you guys. You know, sometimes people give me the credit for making this film. But the truth is, if it wasn't for Ed Diener, who studied happiness for 35 years, or Richard Davidson, who studied it for, you know, studied emotion in the brain for 30 years, or if it wasn't for you who are helping spread the message of the film, none of this wouldn't get anywhere. It wouldn't benefit anyone. And the truth is, this is a collaboration, a massive collaboration of hundreds and maybe even thousands of people if you start to count all of the friends and neighbors and parents who are responsible for who we are. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the, you know, one thing I love to think about is this is not a movie that I made. This is a movie that we made, all of us.
That's beautiful.
And we all can participate as it moves forward.
Fantastic.
That's beautiful. Thank you for the message, for everything you're doing, and we look forward to talking with you again.
Yep.
You guys are wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank
we'll be right
you
back,
so much.
Everybody.
All right.
Welcome back, everybody.
Wow.
Well, that was just such a wonderful conversation. I really enjoyed talking with Rocco.
Me too.
I think there's a lot we can learn from being simple and appreciating the small, the things that are that we take for granted, and not even the smaller things, but the relationships especially. I mean, you know, we're so fortunate to have, if you have one person that you know, feel cared by,
mm-hmm.
it's such a precious gift.
Yeah, we were just saying this morning about how much we miss our parents, because they've been over here, you know, really helping out. Mm-hmm. And you know, when people live so far away, it's really easy to take them for granted. Mm-hmm. You know.
So Moon. I want you to really let us know what you thought about the interview and all the information on that.
Well, the thing that really hits me totally, and this is why I'm happy, it's people, it's loving people, it's being loved, and it's gratitude. And those are the things, when you really sincerely love people and feel loved back, it makes your life feel full and complete. For me, you guys coming into my life 4 or 5 years ago totally changed my life. You remember how depressed I was. So I'd be part of the family now, and we're drumming and doing all these things. I have such hope in my life now. I mean, I feel like I have forward momentum.
Yeah.
And that's you guys. That's love. You guys doing all the things you do pulled me into it. And now I'm living my life, and I'm shining. I'm a shining moon again.
Well,
that makes me happy.
It does.
Right,
and
about that.
And you know what? And happiness is contagious. And because you do shine, and I think it's a result of the community, you know, supporting each
mm-hmm.
other. And I think that's one of the things that are key to being resilient and to be able to overcome different adversities is to be able to be supported by other people.
Mm.
And, you know, for those of you who are feeling isolated now, it's, you know, just by listening to this show, you know, and by reaching out yourself to cultivate a community of people that care about you, that's how you're going to, you know, bring yourself out and allow yourself to be nurtured and cared for and supported. It's really important. And you know, so many of us crawl into a hole.
Oh yeah.
When we're feeling life isn't going the way we want mm-hmm. it, whether we're, you know, we lost our job or we don't have, we lost a relationship mm-hmm. or we have to foreclose on a house or you know, there's so many reasons why. Health reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And we just isolate. And I think it's one of the things he said is doing the things you love.
Yes, definitely.
And so many of us cut that out first.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so important to take the time and just do something that makes you happy. And it can only be, so what if it's 30 minutes in a week?
Right. No, it's amazing. It just blows me away that an entire country can decide that gross national happiness is the way to go. And in doing so, it actually boosted productivity.
Yeah. That makes sense, though.
Totally.
It does, but that's not really the
mindset.
Model.
Yeah,
it's not the mindset at all.
Yeah, it isn't.
You know, we seem to just keep pushing, and we don't know where the brakes are. We just keep pushing for more and more and more and more, and it's insanity because it's really unsustainable. This speed at which we're going.
Well, it takes individuals to make the changes.
That's true. So, that's true. So what's my excuse? Why am I so miserable?
People are so motivated by thinking that money is going to fix everything. And people that don't have money think money's the answer.
Right. And when you do have money, you're looking for something else.
Well, it's like that guy, his friend Shadyak, saw so many people with money that
were unhappy.
Mm-mm. I thought that was pretty major.
I think it may have a temporary effect, you know, but when everything becomes relative and everything catches up to you, then you're left with yourself.
Yeah,
that's right.
You know,
I'm the most happy when I have family around and I get to cook and eat with everyone and have conversation and go outside and sit on the deck or be outdoors and have people around and not really for any particular reason, but just being together. I think that just makes me so happy, and when it's not there because life is busy and there's a lot of travel and you know the family is torn apart, you really feel you have to look for something else to fill that void because that is like the glue that makes me happy. And of course there's creative endeavors and being expressive but it's the family. I think a lot of people take for granted that they come home and have dinner and their families are around and then they go and sit and watch TV, and it's so easy to do that. But when someone's gone, you go, wow. You know, and you could speak to that too, Mona.
Well, you know, I've learned how it's the relationship of yourself to yourself. If you learn how to be happy within yourself, that's really ultimately what it gets down to. If you have others around you and they make you happy when they go, are you happy when you're alone?
That's another thing, too,
That's big.
Yeah.
You know, and I've learned how to be happy with myself. But for whatever reason, so many people struggle with issues inside themselves and can't find a better relationship to themselves with themselves. You know, that's part of it, I think. It's an inside thing.
In the movie, and I don't want to give away too much, because I really want everybody to see it, but they show this, they describe, and I forget, they call it a certain effect, and they show this woman buying new clothes and wearing them, and then she drops them on the floor, and then she goes to buy something else, and you wear them, and you forget about it. And it's that cycle of, oh, this is going to make me happy for a while, and then it loses its newness. It's whatever it has that fulfills you in the moment, it's gone, and you need something else.
Yes.
And that's the piece that I hear you talking about. It's that, when do you stop striving for external things and you look inside and go, am I happy with me just being here?
That's it.
Being with me, and that's really hard to do for
it
so
is.
Many of us.
It is.
To just be with you, with yourself.
For no external reason.
Well, you end up having to look at yourself.
That's right.
You know, I mean, have you ever thought about what it would be like to meet yourself?
right.
Yes.
Oh, you have?
I've thought about it.
I mean, seriously?
So what would it be like? What would it be like?
You mean really?
What would it be like to meet you, Rick?
Oh, good. You know, they all think I'm this great, you know, but I have my miserable times as well.
We all
do. That's why I enjoy, you know, doing interviews like that.
Yeah.
You know, I might look like I know everything. Yes, I know.
Yes.
But
oh, God.
But in reality, I haven't got it all figured out yet. I am what is known as a work in progress.
Yeah. Well, we all are, I think.
I wonder if John Roberts is listening tonight.
I hope so.
I hope so too, because he's got some real insight into the new normal, which is also a part of resiliency. Mm-hmm. You know, so how do we remain resilient and consistent in our happiness?
Well, my answer to that, just my personal opinion, is to remain happy is to allow yourself to fall out of happiness sometimes and then get back into it again and allow yourself to be all the different emotions mm-hmm. that comes with being a human being. But and then to always evaluate and go, what am I doing today to make myself happy? I mean, I when I don't do that, I realize that you find yourself becoming less inspired.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Even in the day, you know, what am I going to do today to make myself happy? I have 10 minutes. What am I going to do in this 10 minutes to make myself happy?
You know what? When I'm being a wipe, I'm being a wipe.
You gave away my name.
No, yeah, I know. Right. Okay. When I'm being a wipe.
It's a nice name, though. It's not too mean.
And I decide that...
I'm around baby wipes too much.
I decide to go out in the car and disappear. When I'm alone, I realize when there is no audience mm-hmm. that... being miserable is futile, so I come home.
Yeah.
Isn't that great?
Yeah, it is.
Works every time.
I get it.
Leave, get it. Come home.
Yeah. Leave, come home. Works every time. Yeah. Good plan.
Yes. So.
Well, we all have something to learn about how to bring happiness into our lives, I think. I don't think anybody has it completely figured out, but like you said, it's a work.
The English don't. Apparently not.
Yeah, right.
The English don't. They come to work with a ham sandwich and a pint of beer.
Simple.
That's what Preston says.
Yeah, right. You know what? That's happiness.
Hey, if it makes them happy, and then you get another ham sandwich and you have another pint of beer for lunch.
Yeah, right.
Not too
Repeat.
Happy for the pig, I don't think.
Yeah, right, no. Pig loses on that.
Ah, dear.
This is great. And I think for those of you at home, we're going to move into doing some drumming with everyone. And again, we're live tonight, and we will be taking some calls after we do some drumming and healing with everyone.
Drumming for happiness.
Yeah, yes. I think drumming for happiness. I think it's a good plan.
It is. It is.
If you are interested in calling, you just have to dial 317-843-4903, and then you'll reach the lovely Carolyn on our switchboard.
Yeah, and tell us what makes you happy. What kind of things make you happy? We want to hear from people. It'd be really good, you know, to just steal a couple of leaves out of your book.
Excellent. Join us.
Yes, join us.
With your
please
leads.
Do.
Bring your leads.
No sack tonight.
No sack
tonight.
All right, guys. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back with some drumming. Welcome back, everybody. So we were just talking, and I think we should all really focus with the intention of this show on not just happiness, but how to allow ourselves to receive happiness, because that's a big thing for many of us, is allowing yourself to receive the things that make you happy, allowing them to come into your life, allowing space for that. Allowing to receive. There's so many of us that are in the mode of giving a lot. And that makes us happy too, because giving is a wonderful thing. But then we need space to receive. And it's really important for that. So I think for this time drumming together, let's all use our intention to open up the space so we can receive happiness in whatever shape or form we're supposed to receive it in. It may be just from, you know, being happy by relieving pain. And that's big. You know, allow in the next 5 to 10 minutes while we're drumming for happiness to become a part of you in whatever way you need it. Maybe being happy right now is about forgiving someone. Or it's about allowing a memory of something that hurt you. Let it go because it's not serving you anymore. So let's just focus on that. Everyone will be very individual, but we'll be connected through our hearts and through the sound. If we don't have any drums, just sit and receive and listen, and we'll be connected with you. So take a deep breath, and we'll start like that. Inhale through the nose and exhale through the mouth. And focus with your feet on the floor. Take a deep breath and just be in silence. Take a moment to be in gratitude. How you guys doing? All right?
Yeah, it's strange for me. Florida. My backside really hurts. And you would think, you know, sitting on my backside all the time,
right,
for a living.
But, you know, it's healed.
Is it?
Yeah.
That makes me very happy.
Yeah. that was my attempt at my feeble attempt at humor. And the subject matter is happiness. So I think humor has a lot to do with it, doesn't it?
You know what? In our house it does, that's for sure. Don't take yourself too seriously.
Absolutely.
Especially after rice and beans, eh?
Yeah, right. That's a good thought. That's great.
Oh, and how we laughed.
And how we laughed.
So do we have any callers that want to say hi to us tonight? If not, we'll just keep talking with each other.
I think we scare them off.
Yeah, right.
Oh, we got one. I bet it's John Roberts.
No. Let's see. Let's do it here.
He's our biggest fan. He's great, man.
We have a caller from Ohio.
Fantastic.
Hello, caller?
Hello.
Hi.
Hey, is this Lauren?
This is Lauren. Who am I speaking?
This is Tamara Sigworth. I live out here in Macomb, Ohio.
Fantastic.
Hi, Tamara.
It's lovely to hear your voice. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing a lot better, I can tell you that.
Well, how did you feel before, and why are you feeling better?
Let me take a deep breath. It's a deep subject. Okay. How do I start this? On March 23rd, 2010, I lost my oldest daughter.
Oh, darling.
From a tragic fall.
Oh.
But I went through therapy and everything else, and I just couldn't find a happy medium, okay?
Yeah.
Oh, let me take a deep breath.
Oh, man, I'm so sorry, darling.
But what helped me a lot, okay, was actually a Def Leppard song. This is awesome. Okay, at the time, the song I heard, my daughter and I had sung this quite a few times. It was called When Love and Hate Collide.
Oh, nice.
And I loved my daughter very, very much. But I hated the idea that I had to let her go.
Oh.
I had to set her free and let her be with the angels. And there's so many people. Okay. Okay, I'm pulling myself together now. Okay, I grew up.
You're doing
up,
great.
Yeah.
I grew up around a lot of music. I'm number 8 out of 9 children. So, like, my music world goes way back.
Mm-hmm.
And plus I got a younger sister, and then having children, you know, I'm up to the, you know, the latest music. But with my daughter and I, what our, you know, our favorite bands was mainly, you know, Def Leppard.
Fantastic.
I mean, her and I just sang all sorts of Def Leppard, and then you're part of Def Leppard there, Rick.
Oh, I know. Yeah, I think music is a really obvious one that really helps all of us. You know, you can listen. You can always find a song that suits, you know, where you are in your life, how you're feeling, whatever mood it is, and somehow it just has a wonderful way of helping us get through the most difficult times.
That's the point right there. I went through therapy. I did this. I talked a bit. It was like, no, this isn't working, you know. And it was a song from Def Leppard that I heard, like, you know, Love and Hate Collide. And it's like, it's music. This is what's making me happy.
Yeah.
Sure.
You know, I have to just thank you for calling, because it takes a lot of bravery to get on the phone and call. And, you know, normally we have some people that call and then they chicken out, and they don't want to call and talk. Mm. But since you've been on the line, our switchboard is, like, full, because I think people are really moved by you. And I think I just need to thank you on behalf of the people that are at home that are listening, that are going through similar things. and they needed to hear you tonight. And I think whatever moved you to call tonight was probably divinely instigated, and I want to acknowledge that. And also just let you know that now that we hear you, Rick and I will be thinking about you always.
Hmm. And another part, too, and everything else, it's the Raven drum. Okay, I'll make a long story short. I do a lot of drumming. You know, with my hands on the table and that, and I get some really funny looks.
Oh, me too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I, you know, I'm part Indian. It's in my blood, you know, and it's just one of those things. But I hope I inspired some people to call. And I want to thank both of you for inspiring me and that, because if I didn't have the inspiration here, I probably would have never made the phone call.
We thank you.
Thank you so much, Tamara.
Okay,
lovely.
Thanks.
All right, darling.
You're
thank
awesome.
You. Bye-bye.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye,
bye.
Darling.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Great call.
Oh, man.
She was great.
Yeah.
Oh, I wish I could talk to her longer.
Yeah.
We have some other calls. I don't think we'll be able to get to everybody. I want to just choose this one that's up next, and it's Jody from Jackson, Wyoming.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Jody, can you hear us? We only have about 3 minutes left. I'm so sorry. Oh. Hello, Jody?
Hello, I'm here.
Hi.
Hey, how are you?
Hi. Hey, welcome you guys from Jackson Hole, Wyoming.
Fantastic, thank you.
You guys, you know, you inspire me so much. And I have to tell you, living here in Jackson Hole and looking at the mountains every day, the Tetons are so inspiring. Mm-hmm. And you guys just have really helped me to center myself here after moving here from Southern California, where we used to live. You know, moving here, and it's a whole new way of life, living in a place where we're not with the beach, we're not by, you know, anything we're used to, but here we are looking at the Teton Mountain Range every day. And, you know, it'd be really easy to get caught up in the personal problems of life. But, you know, when we sit here and look at the mountains and look at the creation that's before us, I can't even imagine a way to be depressed or self-centered looking at these mountains and seeing what they inspire every day. And you guys, I have to tell you, you, Lauren, you and Rick have really helped me to inspire me to look at the simple things of life. And, you know, this mountain range is not a simple thing, but it might have been to me years ago. And, you know, waking up every day to this and seeing the simple things and appreciating them.
Mm-hmm.
And applying that to everyday life.
Yeah,
the Tetons are the most... Sorry about that. The Tetons are the most magical mountains, I think. It's one of my favorite mountain ranges in the whole world.
Yeah.
So I'm glad you brought that up. Now the image is in my mind.
Yeah, right. No, that's true. And besides, Lauren wakes up every morning and sees something simple like me, you know, which is, you know, that inspires her.
Not
you know.
Too simple.
Yeah, right.
Aw. Well, listen,
unfortunately...
We have to wrap up the show tonight. We're about to end the show. So thank you so much for calling. Jody, it's been a pleasure.
Take care.
Thank
you
so much.
All right, darling. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, love you guys. Take care.
You too.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks, everybody, for joining Resiliency Radio. We'll see you on the next show.
Fantastic. Thank
bye,
you,
everybody.
Thank
be
you.
Happy. Mm-hmm. Be happy.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't worry.
Tell a joke, quick.
Okay.
Me. You, me.
Oh, give me a sign. If you could rise up moonlight. Oh, love, how faith is dead and how it surrounds me tonight. Oh, You're by my side. You're by my side.